Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Eric. So a very newsworthy show tonight, I'd say, with multiple championship matches, some title changes, a big debut in the women's division. But let's start with the main event tonight. Jon Moxley defeating Bryan Danielson to win the AEW World Championship. Once again, Moxley is the champion, though this time, you know, it feels more like, okay, he's gonna be the guy here, at least for a little bit. Rather than, okay, he's going to fill the gap until CM Punk comes back. So I thought the two of them had just a really good match. I thought the psychology was strong. Obviously, they were super brutal with the striking and the stiffness of everything, but to be expected from a Danielson and Moxley match. So I was really happy with the main event. I thought it, you know, lived up to the hype that it had, and also kind of lived up to the stage that it was on in terms of this big Arthur Ashe show that's becoming a staple of the AEW calendar every year. So a good night at the office in the main event scene. Eric, what'd you think?
Yeah, that main event was everything you could ask for. I would have asked for 25 minutes to let it breathe even a little bit more. They were going pretty balls to the wall for the first 12 minutes or so. And that is a minor quibble, however. I mean, what they've done with this tournament, this tournament that results in Moxley as champ and MJF set up as his eventual challenger, presumably at Full Gear, but I suppose possibly before then, is AEW has done a successful reset following a period of great turmoil behind the scenes, and really seems to have set kind of a no-nonsense, firm direction. The people who were not contributing in a positive way, who were being passive aggressive or aggressive aggressive in the case of some of them, are not not around, either due to injury, suspension, or both. JR not on Dynamite since the pay-per-view, given his podcast comments. You'd like to think it's Tony Khan having this come-to-Jesus moment where all this chaos is going on. His company, his locker room is crumbling, his company is in chaos, and he just said, F it. I'm the guy in charge. I'm going to set course correct, and I am going to move us forward. And it seems to have happened for the most part since then. Would you agree? Or
yeah, I would. I definitely would. I mean, I think I don't think MJF had the best night out there. And we'll get into that a little bit later, I'm sure. But absolutely. I mean, coming out of All Out, I mean, just think about where they were. You know, CM Punk's the champion. Something clearly is going to go down between him and MJF. And now you have this world title tournament that I think was framed up the right way as it went on. I was happy to see, them kind of hype the main event as the show went on tonight. I always feel like that makes for a big fight feel when the main event rolls around. So I thought that was good. And now, you know, it's just, I think the hierarchy in the company is we're figured out. You've got Moxley at the top as the champion. I think he's been the hottest mainstream act that they've had this year. And now he's got the championship, and now he can go on whatever run he's gonna go on. And I think that is really important. And then when you look across the company now too, you know, I think there's still some loose ends to tie up in a variety of different places, the women's division being one of them. But, you know, the tag team division had a really good night tonight, like with the Acclaimed going over and, you know, getting that big win in front of a big crowd. You know, that, to me, that that matters in terms of framing those titles as a big deal. And for as great as I think Swerve and Keith Lee are, it just felt like they were tucked away on Rampage for the most part. And here you saw kind of the tag team division put on the Acclaimed shoulders, you know, with FTR stepping up a little bit later in the show and kind of saying that they want a shot at those titles. So that division has some direction now too. So I think the pieces are coming into place. It's not going to happen, you know, over a 3-week period in totality, but I think, you know, Tony Khan's started to right the ship. And this was a big night, especially getting that world title picture in position. I think so far so good in that regard.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how they build to MJF and Moxley. I think, Full Gear is like November 19th, I think, which is, you know, I think normally, typically it's maybe 2 weeks sooner, or 2 weeks earlier in the past year, so they're going to have, they've got, you know, 2+ months to, to put it together, you know, 7-8 weeks. And so that gives you a long time to do the build the right way. But it also feels a little bit like too much time, like possibly, right? I mean, you can get around that. You can book smartly. And if Moxley wants to take a few weeks off for his vacation that he didn't get to take, you can do that by having him pre-tape stuff from wherever. Right. And, I'll be honest, I was at that AEW post All Out press conference media availability, which was suitable and awkward, and I, you know, maybe it was seeing 3 days of AEW and 5 days in that post-show press conference, but I was a little bit burned out on the promotion and a little bit frustrated with the behind-the-scenes insanity. It's just a distraction from what matters. And I am now excited again, re-energized to watch Dynamite going forward.
Yes, yeah. I'm too. I mean, this was necessary. You got to get your world title situation, you know, ironed out. It was throwing a huge curveball, and I think, you know, now here, whatever it is, 3 weeks out, less than that, it's that ship's is kind of righted. Do you, you know, we have to talk about MJF. We'll make sure to do that. But through the lens of Jon Moxley, Eric, is this now Tony Khan finally kind of saying, hey, okay, you know, you're the guy now. You know, you were in 2020, pandemic hit, and you know everything went to hell after that. And then, you know, then it's Kenny Omega's time, then it's Adam Page's time, and then it's CM Punk's time. And here you're going to hold this for a little while, and then it's CM Punk's time again. And now, you know, he's the champion. He's got a quote unquote heel opponent to work with in MJF. And it feels to me that like this is now, this to me was like Tony Khan kind of going with Moxley, even if it is for only 7 weeks. Like, I, you know, it feels right to have this belt on his shoulder.
Yeah, he was the hottest act in the promotion. I did not think you could go wrong either way. You could have booked this finish either way. I know the majority opinion was Moxley, the hot hand, ride him. I liked the story and the symmetry in, if Danielson won it, because he would have gotten his wins back in all three opponents who had pinned him in the last year. You know, he beat got his win versus Hangman back, got his win versus Jericho back in the semis, and then this would have been getting his win over Moxley back from, I think it was Full Gear in Minneapolis, where Moxley, like, no, it was earlier this year, I think it was in March, where Moxley kind of won with a cradle at the Revolution pay-per-view, maybe. It was kind of a fluke out of nowhere finish, but that didn't happen. And the story they were telling, which is going forward, they were said they've been laying the groundwork since All Out, the two Dynamites they had prior to tonight, for a MJF Moxley feud. You know, Tony Khan tends to not want to repeat stuff that he's done already, and he's already done Moxley MJF, and he's already done Moxley as champ. But I mean, you can't argue when you put the belt on your hottest, most steady non-head case act, and you set up a challenger who is I guess, in theory, your hottest heel, right? I mean, he's certainly an overact. I know we'll get into this probably as the show goes on, but yeah, I mean, I guess I don't mind the repetition of direction because I feel like sometimes there's a middle ground between the WWE doing rematches every week, 50-50 booking, and like Tony Khan never, you know, rarely booking rematches and sort of you're one and done with a lot of feuds in a lot of cases. So it feels like this is where they need to be, and maybe they can put the controversy in the rear view, at least for until they figure out what they're going to do with this investigation.
Yeah, for sure. Well said. And I'm sure we'll hear, they're looking forward to hearing the opinions of the callers as far as how the night went and about all the other news that we just haven't gotten to yet that we will. But we'll pause there and set the table for the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the September 21st edition of AEW Dynamite, the Grand Slam 2 edition of the show. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Adorn filling in for Wade tonight. He'll be on the Wade Keller Hotline a little bit later running down the show on the VIP side of things. And if you want to go VIP, you can right now, pwtorch.com/govip to hear that show on a daily basis, so many other podcasts, an ad-free version of the website, ads and plugs removed from these shows, and just a really good menu of items to that covers all pro wrestling bases from WWE to New Japan to various indies and everything in between. So pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear with me tonight is from pwtorch.com, Eric Kroll. Eric, man, it is a pleasure. This is a big show. Glad to have you on.
It's the Chicago Connection team up tonight on the post show.
Yeah, it sure is. We won't talk Bears because that'll just, you know, have us reaching for the bottle. But, you know, it was, we got to see each other in person for the first time since All In, I think, right?
I think that's right.
Last two. Yeah. Okay, so look, we'll get the calls. We've got a bunch of calls in the queue, a bunch of great calls lined up. So if you want to get in the queue, we'll just run through these things, guys, and we'll get to as many as we can. If you want to hop on, as I said, 347-215-8558 is the number, 347-215-8558. Press 1 to let me know that you want to get on. And as I said, we will get to as many people as we can, as fast as we can. So, if you want to get us an email, if you don't feel like hanging on the line, shoot us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll either get to those, you know, throughout the show or towards the end, you know, after we wrap on calls. So, okay, with that said, let's start first with Hitton from London, Ontario. Hitton, always a pleasure, my friend. Welcome to the show. What did you think of Grand Slam?
Hey, Zach. And hey, Eric. Good to talk to you guys again.
Hey.
I thought that was a good show, although a little weaker on the wrestling than I was anticipating, to be honest with you. I didn't think the opener was that great. I thought the tag match was a little sloppy, to be honest. But, I mean, we got payoffs for a lot of major feuds. And I'm also not looking as forward to this week's Rampage as I was last year's Rampage Grand Slam. So there's that. I want to start with Claudio first. So, you know, when he came in, you sort of expect him to be like, all right, he'll carry something. He'll carry some title. Maybe he'll carry the ROH division. I was sort of excited when he won it from Jonathan Gresham because I thought Gresham was going nowhere just based on everything they did with him on Rampage, how inconsistent he was, how off TV he was. Now, Claudio as well, I think is he just kind of wrong place, wrong time, and maybe a little too old? Like, his promos have been decent, largely on Rampage, but he hasn't really been clicking as a top act. And I was actually thinking that, yes, Jericho doesn't deserve to win the title based on winning records, but this would definitely add a lot more intrigue to the ROH title scene, right? So what say you on Claudio's reign and then Jericho's prospects?
Yeah, you know, I mean, with Claudio, I just I just don't think he's been given the time ultimately to establish himself. Like, I know he kind of has come into the company like lots of recent folks have come into the company, where it's kind of a big splash right out of the gate, and you get that really fun crowd pop, but then it kind of fizzles slowly from there. And to me that's what happened here. I mean, he kind of was riding that wave of momentum after Forbidden Door, had the match with Zack Sabre Jr., and then joined Blackpool Combat Club, had the War Games match or the Blood and Guts match, and then won the ROH title, but pretty much was tucked away after that. And I think that's a problem up and down the AEW roster. Now, yes, his promos have been okay, but we haven't seen much character development from Claudio. He hasn't been given that type of time on TV. He hasn't had a blood feud with anybody that people and fans can get super invested in. So, you know, I think he falls under the category of this is, you know, former WWE act syndrome that's in the company, but really is, unfortunately, directionless. And with the ROH title, at least he had something. And now I think that's even he loses that too. And then Eric, I'll throw to you in a minute. But then in regards to Jericho, you know, I don't know what business is on the table for Tony Khan with Ring of Honor, but I kind of see this as like, okay, you know, we want to try to put that brand in lights so that we can either get a TV deal or get something on the streaming side of things. But I see that more as like a business move than like some intense, deep story. But Eric, how about you on the Claudio note and Jericho as Ring of Honor World Champion?
Yeah, I mean, he was damaged goods when he came in, right? WWE used him as a glorified jobber, right? I know that's not Wade's preferred term, but, you know, he did a lot of jobs on TV. And so he came in, damaged goods. I thought they did a pretty good job of reestablishing him, Forbidden Door, and especially he scored the winning fall, I think, for his team in the Blood and Guts match, the submission, I think it was, on the top of the cage. And so started off hot, and then got swallowed up by the AEW numbers game. I don't know why they took the belt off of him now. The timing didn't make much sense to me. He didn't really get a chance to get going. I just viewed this as a vanity title reign for Jericho, just so he could say he held all these belts, which, shrug. I mean, I guess if you're going to go with Jericho, the finish made sense in that, ROH's, honor code, he violated it by cheating to win. Cheating to win was a theme in our first three matches tonight overall. the match I thought was good, but not great. Glad it got some time. In hindsight, I would have given 5 minutes of this match to the main event, or cut somewhere else to get the main event 5 more minutes. And then, afterward, they furthered the Daniel Garcia storyline a little bit because he was irritated that Jericho cheated to win. So what is going on with ROH? So Tony Khan is asked about this all the time when he's out doing media rounds, and, he said most recently this week somewhere, he said, he asks Time Warner Discovery every chance he gets to put on an ROH TV show. I don't think he wants to put it on YouTube. That's a common thing people suggest. We'll just turn one of the multiple AEW darks into the YouTube show, because I don't think he wants to do that, because that reduces his leverage. It defines it down automatically as a YouTube show. He wants he wants a TV deal because he wants to monetize ROH a bit to get the money he paid back, the $4 million, $3 to $4 million he paid, probably mostly for the brand name and tape library. Sean Radican was on The Torch, was on Twitter tonight, noting that maybe Jericho has the star power to get them a TV deal. I think it's just, the Time Warner folks might have been willing to listen to an ROH pitch. But, the merger happened, and Warner Brothers Discovery is just busy cutting wherever they can, and apparently now maybe possibly mulling a NBC Universal Peacock-type merger in a couple years. And I'm sure they're like just patting AEW patronizing on the head and like, thanks, kid, but we're a little busy right now, right? It's just not their focus. And so it's the wrestling fans often view the world as, you know, the wrestling at the center of the world. That's just not how it works. I mean, and so here we are. So now Jericho has the belt. What now? It almost seems like that's a move you make when you get a TV deal for ROH because you want to draw eyeballs to it, right? And you build around Jericho a little bit instead of pulling the trigger on that now. So just weird timing, maybe.
Yeah, you know, you I think, yeah. Well said. But also, you brought up a good point in Daniel Garcia, and I wonder if this is like ultimately a move to kind of make Garcia maybe the face of ROH. Like, he's got the Pure Championship right now. He's got the feud with Jericho. And so kind of having that feud kind of culminate in that match kind of can maybe put the brand on Garcia's shoulders, because, you know, it doesn't make sense for Jericho to have that title long term, you know, TV deal or not. And I think, you know, it was a conscious effort to shoot Garcia tonight, walking down, looking kind of upset, but begrudgingly shaking Jericho's hand anyway. Like, I thought that was all very calculated, part of the story. So I wonder, Eric, if you're right, that this is a step towards really trying to crown Garcia as something. So that's an interesting nugget. And as for Claudio, like, you know, I just don't know. I mean, he's got a lot of talent as a wrestler. There's no question about it. But, you know, there has always been something that, you know, leaves him at pretty much this place on the card. And he found that in WWE. And he's starting to find that here, too. And so, you know, he's not in a bad position. But I just, if you're out there going, hey, I hope, you know, Claudio gets a run with the AEW world title and Tony Khan puts the company on his back, like, Eric, I'm not seeing that in his future at this point.
No, I mean, it's a promo company, right? It's a work rate company, but it's also a promo company. There are a ton of very talented people who behind the mic, and that's never been his strong suit. And so, you know, but that's okay, because the other part of AEW is the work rate thing, and I think Claudio excels there. And maybe he becomes a guy. Maybe he becomes like a Lance Archer type, in that they put him, they're comfortable putting him as he's a viable, credible challenger for the world title, but he's not going to win, right? He gets the TV title, the challenge for the world title on TV, mm-hmm. instead of the pay-per-view, and that's, you know, his ceiling, and that's okay, right? You need to fill 2 hours of TV, 3 hours of TV time a week, so that's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, no, it, definitely not. It's just, like, depends on what your expectations were for him coming in the company. As far as the match goes, Hidden, I agree with both you guys. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was pretty clunky. I thought the finish in particular was clunky, with the bat and then the low blow. And so you got what they were going for in the end, but I don't think it was executed as pristinely as they would have liked it to be when they look back and watch that thing again. Hidden, we yammered on for quite some time there, but jump in on any of our comments or take us down a different direction.
Yeah, just another note on Claudio. I mean, surprisingly, say disappointed match. Now, considering these two should know each other's styles, having worked together previously, and also when Claudio had a match with Dustin Rhodes at Rampage, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago now, I was really looking forward to that match, and that match was also a bit of a letdown, and my mind was taken back to Cesaro versus William Regal on NXT, back when NXT was a much, much smaller show. And that match was just pure psychology. There wasn't, 50, 60-year-olds could probably put on that kind of match and it would still be compelling. And I thought, hoping we'd get to see something like that. Unfortunately, we couldn't. And I don't know. So, yeah, Claudio has been, I think there is, yes, there is a certain ceiling with him, but he hasn't even hit that ceiling, is what my concern has been. And I don't think that, I think age might have something to do with it. I don't think it has everything to do with it, though. I think he's got he's got more psychology there, but I don't know, maybe he's just not as excited with his feud so far. If you want to say something on that, otherwise I'll move on to another topic.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it remains to be seen. I'd like to see him, you know, get something he can sink his teeth into as far as, like, a feud goes, and not just have, like, these one-off type matches with Dustin Rhodes and, you know, tonight with Jericho with not a lot of build. I think that he has more range than that, and that would be fun to see, but we haven't seen it yet. So, you know, it's kind of like something to watch moving forward. But go ahead with your other topic or question.
Yeah, since Eric's here, I might as well throw a Hangman question in there. So let's just assume, all right? Let's just assume we're in a world where the backstage politics such is not an issue. CM Punk is still world champion. Hangman had to drop the title, right? And I sympathize with your points about him connecting with a millennial / Zoomer audience in a way that maybe the Acclaimed are also doing right now with that Scissor Me stuff, but maybe at even a higher level than that, right? And but whenever he's not been champion, he's only ever been feuding with people he knows very well, right? People like the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Dark Order, that sort of circle. So if we assume that we're in a universe now where Punk's champion, Hangman Page, had to lose the title, what would you like to see Hangman do? As in, what role do you see him filling when he's not, you know, the underdog playing out that story to ascend to the championship throne again?
I mean, given the equity, the time they've spent and the equity they've built in Hangman, when you are not... In a normal promotion where the title was the focus, and it's possible AEW is about to become that promotion again with Moxley and MJF. But in a normal promotion where you're trying to line yourself up for a title match and the title is the all-important thing, you know, Hangman is in that mix. He's a good semi-main event babyface, right, just based on his connection with the fans and how much time you've put trying to make him a homegrown guy. Where is he now? Well, there was a backstage promo on one of the shows where it seems like the Dark Order and Hangman are headed for a feud with Rush and Andrade. That they shot that. It was like shoehorned in on some show within the last couple weeks since All Outs. Yeah, so are we gonna get Hangman and Rush? I mean, that would break Hangman out of your you know, what you note, like only wrestling people he knows. It seems like a bit of a weird mix there, and you know, wrestling style wise, but Rush has been on his best behavior and has had his working boots on. Potential for tags there. I'd hate to see Hangman in a position where he's putting Rush and Andrade over on their way to up the card. It's possible, right? You tend to get, if you're not in that title picture, you tend to get lost in the mix if you're not in, like, one of the top singles feuds. So I'm a little bit nervous about where Hangman goes from here. I will take this time, since you provided the segue. You know, CM Punk got his receipt in the ring. Why did he have to continue to pummel the guy backstage at the AEW All Out press conference, right? If Punk would have just stopped after burying Colt Cabana, there probably wouldn't have been a brawl backstage, and none of these guys would have been suspended. So I feel like he got his receipt on Hangman. He didn't need to keep kicking the guy after he'd already killed him, and Hangman didn't get a chance to respond. So
yeah. I mean, you're right. I'm a little worried about Hangman too, to be completely honest. Like I still think he has incredible value to the company, but I really think he needs something to kind of frame him as a player. Like even something like Ricky Starks has right now with Powerhouse Hobbs. Like it's not like a feud that's going to be on the billboards. It's not going to be on the marquee. It's not going to be, you know, headlining social media promotion. But it's a really strong personal grudge type program. And I want to see Adam Page in that type of environment where it's not little, it's not meta stuff. It's not like staring down at the Bucks before Buckshot Lariat. It's, you know, I don't like this guy and I'm going to fight him. And I want to see that pro wrestling story play out. We've yet to see that from Adam Page, and I think he has it in him because he's a strong babyface, and the crowd really likes him. So I would be playing into that. And I think my end game with him would be to eventually, if you kind of stipulate to the fact that MJF is going to have the title at some point, you know, I'd be looking at, you know, Revolution or Double or Nothing next year. And, you know, you try to keep Page up to be a very supremely credible opponent for MJF as champion. I mean, I think that's still on the table and can still do business for the company, but you can't have him kind of in and out of stuff with Dark Order and you know, losing to Rouge. Like, I just think he's a former world champion. Like, and I think you got to treat him as such and get him into something that is impactful.
It would not be the worst thing in the world if Tony Khan, after the mess following All Out and all of the backbiting, public sniping and all that, it would not be the worst thing in the world if he just said, enough, no more BS, no more griping, you know, let's all be adults, right? And he puts his foot down. I don't know that that's his personality, but it certainly, by some reports, the locker, you know, Fightful had a report today behind the paywall about, you know, there's yet another talent meeting today, and people seem relieved by and large. There's like the tension is dissipated. And so it would be great if Tony Khan just said, stop with the passive aggression, you know, elite guys, and let's clean this up and let's, you know, I'm in charge. I'm in control. I'm booking your programs. No more BS.
Yes. That'd be very refreshing, I think. Absolutely. Hitting back to you.
Yeah, fair points, to be honest. I really think he needs to shine outside of his bubble a little, and I think he has the potential to do that, to be honest with you. I think he'd make a better babyface in peril than Ricky Starks or Jungle Boy, to be honest with you. He just has a bit more likability than either of those two do, I think. My final point is on Saraya's return today. Given her injury record, it does kind of scare me a little, but, you know, we have Christian back, and nothing's gone too wrong. So are you guys excited to see Paige back in the fold, back potentially wrestling again? Personally, I'm a little indifferent because I've seen the formula, right? I've seen Athena come in, I've seen Toni Storm come in. They just kind of get shuffled into the same women's wrestling formula here, which is kind of how WWE used to do it, where it's like a token women's match here, you know, on each show. They don't do the, you know, credit to them, they don't do the overtly, you know, sexualized stuff, but still, it's still the AEW women don't get the TV time or even the stories. Like, when's the last time Britt Baker ever had a, you know, compelling story? When's the last time any women... When's the last great women's rivalry that ever took place in AEW? Never. They only had, like, a couple of memorable matches, but I don't remember any good stories, right? So I'm a little less enthused, even though I'm happy that she found a landing spot, and I hope that she's happy. What are you guys' take on Saraya's prospects here?
So, I mean, just like the other kind of big-time acquisitions that that Tony Khan has made for the AEW women's division, I think there's so much potential here, like, and maybe more so than some of the other ones, like Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm, you know, because I think Saraya, formerly known as Paige in WWE, is she's a big player. Like, she has a lot more history than Toni Storm did coming in. I think she's just more well-known name than Toni Storm or Thunder Rosa coming in. So I think the potential is there. The thing that just kind of concerns me or has me not fully buying in is just we've been here before with multiple talents. And they've come in and they've kind of stagnated after they come in. And so, you know, I'll say it again. Like, you have a chance here with Saraya. And I think if you tell the story the right way, especially with her, given her injury history, the fact that she's retired, the fact that she's been away from the ring for so long, the comeback story with her is just right there and just on a silver platter for you to go with if you're Tony Khan. And so, again, I think he needs to focus on that. You know, you have Saraya now. It's not like there's anybody else in the women's division that's piping hot outside of Jade Cargill. And so with that said, I think that's the match you build towards. You know, you try to – eventually you get the AEW Women's World title on the waist of Jade, and boom, you put her in front of a hot Saraya who has spent, you know, 6 to 8 months, maybe 9 months to a year, like chasing down that title. And, like, it's going to take that to create investment in that division at this point. And so I'm taking my time with this, Eric, and – positioning Saraya as a big deal from business perspective, but also you just don't know how long you're going to have her for. You know, I mean, like she is, she has neck problems. She has an injury history. And so, you know, you're going to have to play it safe with her and rightfully so. But while you have her and while she's active and while she can go, you know, I think you have to treat her like the big star that she is. Eric?
Yeah, I mean, she got a big pop, which you would expect for, you know, fans pop for news. They pop for returning stars, especially in debuts. You know, my first question was, is she cleared? I have to think she's cleared. Otherwise, why bring her in, right? There's not a lot of point. She being a manager, I mean, that just doesn't seem to justify probably the salary. You know, it's really risky. For what you guys said, but you know, on the other hand, lots of people have come back after years away. Edge and Christian, two obvious ones. Danielson had the first two guys had neck. Danielson had head. Injury is a problem. I did like tonight that she didn't actually signal whether she's a face or a heel, right? They could save her sort of mission statement. Why is she here? What's she want to do? Is she a face or a heel? She could save that for next week, which is good for your episodic television. Didn't need to hear from her tonight. What they did tonight was enough. Interested to see how it unfolds. Worried about the health of the person involved and whether this is the best move. At some point, you keep putting, you know, Edge, Christian, Danielson, those types, you keep putting folks with injuries, histories like that in the ring, and the luck runs out, right? And I just really hope that doesn't happen to any of these people. So,
okay, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and so I want to make sure that I note on that too. You know, if she's not fully cleared 100%, then I wouldn't do any of the things that I suggested. Like when I say that and analyze her value to the company, I'm assuming that, you know, she has been medically cleared and is healthy enough to go. I mean, it's certainly not worth the risk of any just long-term serious damage. So I'm erring on the side of Tony Khan knows this and she's okay. But if for some reason that's not the case, yeah, that's a bigger problem, a bigger story. But all the potential in the world, Hidden. Thanks a bunch. I appreciate the call as always. And great talking to you.
Thanks, guys. You too. Have a good night.
Yeah. Everybody check out Hitten's AEW Rampage Hits and Misses column that goes up on pwtorch.com every weekend, usually sometime on Saturday. Sometimes it hits Sunday. But great piece. If you're not watching Rampage, you can get your fix here. And Hitten does a nice job of determining at the end of the column whether or not you should watch the show or not. So everybody check that out over the weekend on pwtorch.com. All right, we'll keep it going. We'll go to Ian in Tennessee next. Ian, always a pleasure. What'd you think of Grand Slam tonight?
I thought it was kind of an up-and-down show. I mean, you know, I was disappointed with the opening match. The tag match I thought was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't as good as the match at All Out, but honestly, I was very disappointed with the Pac Orange Cassidy match. What did you guys think about that match?
Eric, what did you think?
I loved that match during the match, and then the finish just kind of came out of nowhere and didn't make any sense to me. Pac has not, the crowd got gave him a "This is awesome" chant, and I would say maybe not awesome, but very good. And then Pac used the hammer, and he has not been, I mean, I know he's a tweener, but the Death Triangle has not really been heels, right? I mean, they've been positioned closer to the babyface side of the spectrum than heels, and so that just seemed like it came out of nowhere. But I guess the rationale would be Orange sucker punched him while he was doing a promo last week, so this was his way of getting revenge. But it just felt flat to me. I mean, you could tell the crowd, it just took the air out of the crowd, and Pac being a heel didn't make sense to me, or I thought it was weird because Ethan Page, I think, is the next person set up. He mentioned during the firm's long mission statements segment that he wants the All Atlantic title, and he's up next, and he's certainly a heel. So I guess it's going to be a heel matchup. What did you think, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I liked the match too, and I liked the match up until the finish. I thought the finish really threw things off course, and you know. This felt a little to me like, hey, we want Orange Cassidy on the card, more so than like it's time for these two to have another match together. And so I thought that the match suffered with that premise just because it just didn't have a lot of steam behind the build. And so I don't think they didn't have very many different places to go or levers to pull in the match to make it like really interesting. Like, I think back to Revolution 2020 and the match that they had at that show and how hot that was. And this wasn't anywhere near that. So yeah, it was a good match. I think it was in the right place on the show. Like, I don't think it hurt the show. I think it fit for where it was given, you know, the other major happenings that took place. And so, yeah, you're not, every match isn't going to be this, you know, barn burner of a match. This wasn't, but I think it's kind of a one and done type thing too. The heel Pac stuff was a little weird, but I don't know, Eric, it just seems to me that like Tony Khan's willing to sacrifice that sometimes to get to what he wants on a show.
Yeah, there was a I mean, I guess it was to protect Orange Cassidy in a way.
Sure.
And he was mad because he got sucker punched by Cassidy the week before, but there was an easy way to quickly spruce up the build for this one, and that is they have history, right? I too was there at Revolution 2020 3 weeks before the world shut down at Wintrust Arena in downtown Chicago, and that was when Orange kind of first came out of his shell. It was his first like big focus push match as a single, where he was less meme wrestler and more a guy who proved he knew, you know, could go in the ring and have a good match. And then they, I think, Double or Nothing 2020, 2021, maybe? Well, there was a three-way with Pac, Orange, and Kenny Omega for the title, right? So
yep.
Would that have been 2020 or 2021? Probably 2021.
I think that was.
It was one of the first event back from the pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, so there's history there that you could have just nodded to a little bit in a not a three-minute video package, but like a 30-second effective video package, and you could have helped that a little bit, I think, with the build.
Yeah. Ian, back to you.
Yeah, I think that was 2021 because that was when Kenny was world champion. But back to the tag match, I just think it's time to just rip the Band-Aid off and make I won't say the team in respect for Wade, but make Swerve and Keith make them one of the best heel tag teams in that company, because Swerve gives off that heel vibes, and I could see Keith Lee being a dominant heel in the tag team division.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they both have it in them for sure to kind of continue on with the kind of the heel reactions they've been getting. I think you have to kind of address the elephant in the room with that, which is you've got this kind of super babyface team that's incredibly over with the acclaimed kind of forcing the hand of Lee and Strickland to act the heel part. Like, I don't think they were they were cast as that when they became champions. But so they definitely have it in them. But I, to me, you know, it's still an oddball pairing. And I think both guys are actually better off in the singles division. There's a lot of tag teams on the roster, but there's not, you know, a ton of, you know, top-level singles talent like that can that can go. And so I'm, if it's me, I'm using this opportunity. And they teased certain parts of the match where they had Keith Lee and Swerve not really on the same page. You had one of them get hit with the belt from the other one. So I think that there's seeds planted there. But I'm Eric, I'm moving them into the singles division. I think they're valuable pieces if Tony Khan wants them to be on that side of things.
Yeah, I feel like you could do a feud. Swerve has just natural, really, really good cocky heel chemistry. You know, it was the charisma that he's got. And that was evidenced at the at the post-all-out press conference.
Mm-hmm.
I asked Tony – so Keith Lee and Swerve come out, and I asked the question that, you know, social media had all night following the, you know, that first acclaimed Swerve and Lee title match. And it was, you know, hey, as Keith Lee and Swerve are sitting there, did you think about calling an audible in the middle of that match and switching the finish? And Tony Khan was shut me down and is like, now's not the time for that question. But Nick Hausman from Wrestling Inc., who was sitting in the front row in front of me, followed up and was like, no, this is he wanted to ask the question too. And it's like, this is a good question. So I think he posed it to Keith Lee and Swerve Scott. And it's like, why is this not the time to ask the question? Because it's awkward that these two guys are sitting there and you put them over and I'm asking, should you have made the other call? They're performers and the belts are props, right? And so, it, you know, it's part of the problem with the AEW press conferences. It's like this weird mix of a storyline and actual journalists trying to find out actual news. But, you know, in the course of that, Tony Khan was sitting there while those two guys were out there, and you could see the wheels turning in his head. And he proposed the idea, hey, why don't we do a rematch in New York in 2 weeks, you know, or 3 weeks or whatever it was at the time. And so I claim a small asterisk of an assist. Maybe he already had that in mind to put the belts on those two in a rematch. But we in the media, you know, pushed him in that direction a little bit. I mean, I thought I liked the match. It wasn't always 100% smooth, but I thought Caster selling the knee like he fell off the top rope and you thought that was the finish was a great twist, right? I thought, oh, now they're not going to win because he's selling the knee. Then Swerve did a great dive. But, you know, in the end, the Acclaim prevailed and they got the huge pop. And so, Swerve and Lee always kind of felt like Tony Khan brought him in, didn't really know what to do with either of them individually. And so he mashed them together like more of a ravishing Rick Rude, Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez. We need a tag team to carry the belts here in the short term. So we these guys, two singles guys, aren't doing anything. Let's put them together. I think a Lee and Swerve match would be interesting. There's that size. The psychology would be off because Swerve is smaller and Keith Lee would be the babyface and he's bigger. So I'm not sure how that would work. It might be a bit of a problem, but you know, nothing you can't put the great wrestling minds that AEW has backstage to try and work out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the match, I liked the match too. I thought that it was clunky at times, yes, but to your point, like it didn't seem like it seemed clunky in a way that maybe a fight would go and not like that they got the dance steps wrong. And I think that there's a good clunky and there's a bad clunky. And I think this was more on the good clunky side of things. And then it's just, you know, it was just such a cool environment and a cool moment for the acclaimed, like a true homegrown act at winning titles. And so, yeah, it's fascinating to see their rise. I've been kind of questioning their momentum and popularity, but you know, you just can't argue with the reaction that they got tonight. And you know, you it's smart of Tony Khan to ride this for however long it stays hot.
Yeah, I mean, at All Out, I think we were both in the building, and it was almost like the crowd went into business for itself and decided to amuse itself by coming up with the "Oh, Scissor Me, Daddy" chant, which was just patently ridiculous, but it's hilarious, right? And it just got them over so huge that, you know, I mean, I don't know if Tony Khan had a rematch plan, but he certainly went to it. I think the important thing about the Acclaim's win tonight is that it's another homegrown act that that is getting pushed, you know, in a big way, and that hasn't always been the case in AEW. One of the big criticisms that a lot of the folks at analysts at Team Torch have is that there's no upward mobility, there's no moving up or down the card, and the Acclaimed are a homegrown act that did just that, right? They went from doing job, you know, being comedy jobbers as heels on TV to, you know, being the men in the tag team division. And so, you know, AEW did that with Wardlow. They did a great job building Wardlow up and elevating him as a homegrown act, and then he's sort of been floundering. So they really got to be cautious not to let that happen to the Acclaimed, but they seem to be setting up an FTR match maybe at Full Gear after FTR dispatches with Billy Gunn's boys there. So I have a little bit of cautious optimism there.
Well, right. Well, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, like, on the surface, you think, okay, Acclaim versus FTR, this is great. But, I'm not fully behind that yet because you've got a team in FTR that was hot in their own right. Like, and hotter than I think, you know, anybody saw coming for a while. And they haven't been kind of wrestling in the quote-unquote tag team division and going after the AEW World Tag Team titles. And so I think that there's a good chunk of the audience that wants to see them, you know, be those guys in the division. And then on the flip side, you have the Acclaimed who are, like, rising up through the ranks. They're as popular as they may ever be right now. I don't know that it's smart to put those teams against one another right out of the gate, even though, you know, it's a right thing for each team in a vacuum. You put them together and you could have a mess on your hands.
Well, FTR they could work heel. They can shade heel in that match if they,
I mean,
so popular. Yeah. To me, FTR was really hot. And then Tony Khan, are they still?
Yeah,
that's
a good point. Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, I mean, and I guess if you're FTR, you probably just want to get on TV and get a good feud going at this point because you're frustrated in that regard and don't bother hiding it on your social media. You know, first we'll get FTR and the Ass Boys, and presumably there will be some interim TV challenge team for the Acclaimed. I don't know who that'll be. That'll probably, you know, get an idea next week. And you have a TV program, and then, you know, it seems to be the direction they are going in, unless it's another FTR head fake out.
Well, it's a good point. It's a good point on I guess, yeah, like if you're hanging on to what FTR was, you're probably where I'm at. But you're right. I mean, it Tony Khan cooled them off for whatever reason, like, you know, leaving them off TV for as long as he has and just not featuring them after that hot run over the summer, you know, it has cooled them off. And so as strange as it is to say, you know, the Acclaimed, I think, are the priority act at this point in time,
yeah.
Just given how much momentum they have. So, yeah, good point. Ian, throw back to you, man, for any final questions or comments for us before we try to get some more callers in here.
You guys talked about MJF, and I wanted to say I felt like MJF kind of just missed what they were trying to do. I mean, it just made no sense why he was out there and Wheeler Yuta was out there just trading weird insults, and then he shoves Tony Schiavone, and then Schiavone kind of just, like, butches the fall. I mean, it just felt awkward, in my opinion. I was just curious what you guys thought about that whole thing.
Well, Zach, I know you have strong feelings on this. It got into Twitter kerfuffles tonight, so why don't you go first?
Yes, I made a big mistake. You know, I actually put an opinion out on Twitter. I'm kidding. Everybody was pretty respectful with our debate. But yeah, I mean, Ian, I'm with you, and I'm with you kind of times 10. Like, I do not think that was a good night out for MJF. Look, he's a big star, and he's an overact. There's no question about that, and I'm not arguing that. But the fact that you have him out there now, and when he's talking about the audience, you know, drinking his spit because they love him so much, and then you pan to a guy in the crowd who's cheering that on, that doesn't line up. And that continuously happened in this promo. And then I'm worse than that, you had him, like, you had Wheeler Yuta out there, poor Wheeler Yuta, trying to paint MJF as this despicable, vile human being. He railed, like, a whole bunch of words, negative words, negative connotation on MJF, and, you know, the audience is booing that because MJF is a guy that I think people are they're not siding with, but they're, you know, he's getting a strong positive reaction, and the booking and who he's facing and who he's opposite and what he's saying is not matching up with how the audience is reacting to him. And so what I think you have here is, you know, what made MJF so great, you know, in his, since the beginning of AEW, was the fact that he was like a real heel. Like, this wasn't like, oh, he's a heel, but we like him, or, oh, he's a cool heel that has a couple catchphrases or that directs a song like Seth Rollins. You know, he was a heel's heel. Like, he got heat unabashedly, and he was, it felt like really genuine. And now that the crowd is kind of playing along with the heat lines that he's using, it just feels way less authentic, way less real, way less, you know, credible, impactful, and doesn't paint him, I don't think, as the star that he was, because it's all kind of, you know, ha-ha type stuff at this point. So I wasn't happy with what they did. I understand that, you know, you were planning something with Punk and MJF, but after what they did over the summer at Double or Nothing and kind of the work shoot stuff, and then you had MJF come out there and cut a promo on Tony Khan and on AEW and then disappear, you know, I think it was just one of the only times in AEW history where, you know, Tony Khan kind of misread the crowd there. And I think, you know, MJF would be weird to see as a babyface, but I think that's where you're at with him at this point because the fans are cheering him so much. So it's an uphill battle for him at this point to go out there and continuously try to get heat. And like we saw from Wheeler Yuta tonight, you know, MJF is burying his babyface opponents when he's out there getting heat and the audience is just eating him up or eating up the babyface when he tries to kind of be that shining knight that's going up against MJF. And then I'll also enter into the evidence, you know, Tony Schiavone, MJF calls Tony Schiavone like a fat slob or something like that, and the audience just cracks up laughing. Like, you know, that's a guy that's over doing work, but the work that he's doing is not impactful to the product at this point. And so I think they've got a tough road ahead with him. And, you know, New York, I get it, but I don't think he's serving the product well at this point. Eric, take it away.
So I know that that's the prevailing view at Team Torch. If you listen to Wade and Jason Powell's flagship show from this week, they had made similar points about how they haven't liked MJF in his return and, you know, what he's been doing so far. And I'm going to disagree. I think, one, it's really, really, really hard to be a heel in 2022 when there's just natural wrestling fans want to cheer you. And it is true, MJF was a great heel who got booed and didn't try to get cheered. They made a big mistake when they allowed him to – they wrote him off TV, but they were so desirous, yeah, because they had the Time Warner Discovery folks backstage in L.A. right after the pay-per-view in early June, and they wanted to pop a rating, and they had to send MJF out there, and he cut a heel promo and turned AEW and Tony Khan heel – Tony Khan's getting booed now sometimes when he comes out, and that he baby-faced himself in the process. That was the big problem that I have. That's where it all started to go wrong. And then, you know, he returned in Chicago, and they screwed that up too because they should have saved it for the Dynamite. I know they like big surprises, but they should have saved that for the Dynamite after, although in hindsight, Punk was injured, so it would have been a moot point. But when you return – it, you know, and the last thing you did was you turned yourself face by healing on the company, which always gets cheered in wrestling since Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, did it. You've set yourself up in this situation at All Out where he's cheered and overshadows Punk winning the title for the first time in his hometown. Again, at the time, we didn't know Punk was going to be out, so it didn't matter. But you know, so those two things have set up MJF. as a babyface, and they are swimming against the tide. You know, you may recall Cody Rhodes had the opposite problem, and he's no longer in the company. So that said, I have not had a problem with MJF's promos the last 2 weeks. I've liked them. I thought they were really good. Poor Wheeler Yuta is out there, like, to be this sacrificial lamb. He's totally not a promo guy. He seems naturally quiet. He has fire in the ring, but not behind the mic. And, you know, he tried. But you know, MJF even baked that into his response, right? He tried to cover for the fact that Wheeler, you know, was struggling. But when MJF goes out there now, he's hamstrung. He's got one hand tied behind his back because the crowd wants to cheer him now when they didn't before. They truly hated him, like you said. So what does he have to do? He has to go over the top and heal it up in an almost comical character way, which he wasn't previously, to get booed. Right, tonight was, he did a little bit of Rick Rude. Any of your wives would want to sleep with me, but they're all, you know, ugly sweat hogs or whatever, right? And then the other thing he did was he got heat on Tony Schiavone by pushing him down, right? If there's one thing AEW, they've used it sparingly, but the only other person to really heel on Tony Schiavone was Britt Baker back when she was on that, she was struggling and wasn't over as a babyface, and she turned heel on Schiavone on that first Jericho cruise, live with the Starbucks promo. And it worked because Tony Schiavone's a real, you know, people have a soft spot for him. And so that was a way to get heat. So now we can talk later about, you know, Schiavone not really selling that for very long. And that was a bigger mess than MJF, right? Why is Tony Schiavone then in a pre-tape from earlier in the day, right? You just saw the guy get shoved down, and then here he is all fine on camera. I know Excalibur tried to cover for it, but that was a mess. And then Schiavone is announcing the next match, and he disappears. Then he disappears for a while magically. And then he comes back and they announce, you know, the announcers say, "Are you okay?" And Tony Schiavone's like, "Yeah, I just went to Doc Samson." It was like Tony Khan was sitting there in the gorilla position, or backstage with his microphone. And he's reading tweets in real time and trying to make his angle with Tony Schiavone make sense. And they're just making shit up as they go along to cover for it, which I'm almost 100% sure is what happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is, yes. But, okay, so after MJF, though, like, what – and I think you make a good argument. But if you talk about it as – what makes this different? And this is not a leading question. I'm genuinely – I think this is an interesting debate to have. What makes this different than – no, Roman Reigns as a babyface being just pushed that way regardless of the crowd reaction? Like, that had a negative effect on the product. It hurt the heels that he worked with, and it never fully clicked because it was unnatural, because that response was not lined up. Here, you know, it's not exactly the same thing because it's in reverse, but I think the end game is still there, in that if you have MJF working John Moxley, for example, and you have like MJF during the build talk about, you know, his troubles with alcohol and just railing him for that and using that for heat, but then you go out for the match and he's cheered, or worse than that, he's cheered during those promos, like, that I don't think that's good for your product long term. And so I don't know how long they can or should, you know, go with this with MJF, because it comes to a point too where the opportunity cost of trying to hit on him as a babyface to make some money also is going to lose steam at some point too. So just I kind of spewed a lot there, but take it away, since you're kind of on the other side of
I think so. It's not lost yet, because MJF has proven he can still get the fans to boo him, right? He has to go over the top to do it. He has to use cheap heat tactics. You know, tonight he shoved down the beloved babyface announcer. I'm not sure I would have done it that soon, but the problem they faced also, I probably should have said it the first time, MJF was in New York, where he's the hometown guy, so he's going to be cheered as a babyface, right? He's going to be cheered. The difference so far, and this is something that we're gonna have to watch and monitor, but MJF is still able to get the crowd to boo him when he does something super dastardly. But, you know, after a certain point, Is he going to drop an anvil on somebody? I mean, you know, there's only so much you can do, so many levers you can pull to try and beat back the babyface reaction. Cody last year, for example, and early this year when he was – Cody did everything in his power to remain a babyface, and literally he just lost – at a certain point, he just lost the ability. He got booed no matter what, right?
Mm-hmm.
He literally lit himself on fire, I think, and still got booed, you know, in that
yes,
match.
He did.
And so, yes, there is a very real danger. They had a perfect pathway to MJF. They could have done a double turn with Punk and MJF at Full Gear if that's when they were going to do that match. They could have, you know, copied Austin, since they like copying from the past.
Yep.
They could have done an homage to Austin Brett at WrestleMania when they did the double turn, and that would have allowed them to keep, you know, to stop fighting the MJF babyface thing that's going on, and also turn Punk, who is you know, a good heel, you know, was a good heel in real life and in the backstage and on the mic. So, but now that avenue's shut off to them. And so they're the biggest match they can make at this point is MJF and Moxley. So I understand why they're doing it, but yeah, I guess Moxley is so beloved. I don't know that they're going to necessarily boo him against MJF. I mean, but yeah, it could happen, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. That we have to see. And I guess it's worth saying, you know, maybe that was the plan, you know, with MJF and Punk, you know, to leverage that and go in that direction. Obviously, that had to change. And so, you know, it could be that they had a different plan for him, and now they're kind of stuck. But either way, that's what they're putting on TV. So it's worth discussing. Good stuff, Eric. Okay, Ian, thank you very much. Any other final comments here before we move to some other calls? Glad you brought up MJF. I've been waiting, chomping at the bit to talk about him.
I figured I'd go ahead and just rip that Band-Aid off for you guys so I didn't have to just drag on. But, no, I mean, all in all, it was a fairly good show, and I'm intrigued to see, you know, where they go with Moxley and Blackpool Combat Club. It feels like Blackpool Combat Club's kind of just falling apart right now. I mean, it had such good momentum after Blood and Guts, but it's kind of just disappeared. But you guys have a good night, and I'll look forward to talking to you guys next week.
Thanks a bunch, Ian. Appreciate the call. Okay, we will continue on here. Larry in Beerstown, Illinois, you are up next. Larry, always a pleasure. What did you think of
kind of up and down overall. I liked it. You can say what you will about some of the stuff that AEW does, but it's almost never dull. There is something I haven't heard anyone talk about, and I wanted to point out, maybe ask a question first. Is it me, or is Britt Baker lucky she didn't get a fractured skull on that attempted Samoan drop fall-away slam that Athena did? And I don't know if you might have an opinion on it, but me personally, as a fan, I'm sitting here, and as soon as she picks, you know, she's got both of them up, I'm thinking this is not going to end well. And to me, it was something that wasn't necessary and didn't really add anything to the match. I just wanted to know what you both thought of that.
I mean, I winced for sure because you saw her head kind of get lost down there. And I was glad that, okay, it didn't hit. Like she was able to tuck and her not land on her head. But then, you know, Athena came crashing down on it. So, yeah, I mean, a scary moment, but glad she was able to get up and finish the match. Eric, how about you?
Yeah, I didn't. I was taking notes, and I didn't see exactly what happened. I just saw – it seemed like – I thought the match had some creative spots in it. You know, the leg – when they the two of them had the leg holds on and they did a slap battle, that was pretty innovative. You don't see that every day. That was well booked. Yeah. And then – you know, it seemed like there, but the Athena thing, where all of a sudden they're trying not to feature so much blood on AEW as they used to, clearly, because they didn't, like, you know, back in the Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa lights out match, they literally, it was like blood porn with just focusing. It helped get Britt over huge, right? Her laughing after she's bleeding out of her face. They avoided that for the most part. They went to a wide camera angle as Britt was in the corner trying to recover. And unfortunately for them, it happened at the end. And so it caused kind of some confusion because Britt was in there to go get pinned. And I thought she was a little bit dazed and confused. You know, I thought she might have been concussed. But you know, she seemed to rebound from that in the post-match beatdown. So I wasn't quite sure what to make of that beyond a broken nose and, you know, maybe got her bell rung a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was a dangerous spot that they didn't quite get. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't chalk it up to any kind of, like, you know, anything from the ill will side of things. It just was a accident, and you know, you bond, it happens. But yeah, certainly, Larry, something that you kind of wince at for sure. But anything else, Larry? What else did you think of the show tonight? What other questions you got?
Well, I don't know if it was a timing issue or not, but I think they may have wanted to do something more at the end of the Moxley Danielson title match, because you could see, at least on my end, when I was watching on TV, that William Regal was putting the belt on Moxley and Danielson snatched the belt away from him, and then that was it. The show went black, and I don't know if that was how they planned the ending or if it's something they may, you know, show on Rampage or talk about on the next week's Dynamite. I just wondered if you thought that was a timing issue or they meant to end the show right then and there.
I think it was a timing issue. I think that, you know, that they just were running long and they couldn't get it in, which was unfortunate, because I think that's it's important, especially with such a big show like tonight was in the Arthur Ashe environment and Grand Slam, world title match in the main event, you're crowning a new champion because the title's vacant. Like, it's important to give that moment time to breathe, and so the fans can live in it. So the audience in the building can live in it. People at home can watch Moxley celebrate, and you really get that thrill of victory. And you got it for like a split second, and then it went away. And so I that was disappointing. I think you wanted kind of more time to showcase that, especially if you're going to do some kind of, you know, belt angle with Danielson. And my guess is there's something up on social media right now on the, you know, AEW accounts kind of highlighting what it was that happened, Eric. Because yeah, it felt abrupt, and I just, you know, it's a big moment. John Moxley wins the title, but I don't think they, you know, got as much out of it as they could have if they just, you know, were wrapped up a little sooner.
Yeah, certainly wouldn't be the first time AEW just ran out of time at the end of Dynamite because they overstuff it. Yeah, boy, the Blackpool Combat Club are they were taking the W's all summer. Now they're taking the L's in the fall. You know, Danielson a loss, Claudio lost to Jericho, Yuta lost his title, so it's you know, Moxley is champion again, but you know, some of the other members are on the downswing. Looks like.
Yeah. I mean, did you kind of get the sense that it was a timing thing and not?
They didn't. I guess I would think differently if in the match they teased like Danielson was healing, who comes out of the heel tunnel still, like he was healing it up or cheating in the match. You know, like the first three matches all ended due to cheating, being decisive. You know, being the turning point and decisive, providing the margin of victory. And they didn't tell that story in this match. It was just like a G1 style match. I think Tyler Sage called it in his Torch.com analysis, and I would agree with that. They beat the holy living hell out of each other. It was great violence. It was about what you would expect, right? The expectations super high. They didn't have enough time to, you know, pull out a five-star classic, but, you know, you could go four and a half maybe with it. It was really enjoyable. They had good near falls. Nothing in the match indicated tension in the ranks, right? I don't think.
Yeah, I didn't get that sense either. Yeah, which is why, I think this would have been a cool moment to see Danielson do that. It would have made, you know, the Blackpool Combat Club showcase them as the kind of the family of violence that they're presented as. I think you want to hit on that, Larry, if you're Tony Khan, and not miss moments to emphasize the most important things on your show. But Larry, back to you.
Well, that's about all I wanted to ask and talk about. I bet you've got a lot of callers waiting, you can say what you, again, say what you will about the AEW programs. They're not uneventful. You can say that for it. And I'll be calling back again next week. And, well, kind of paraphrase, being an old-time fan here, paraphrase Gordon Solie, so long from the land of Lincoln.
Very good, Larry. I love it. Excellent. And thanks for the call. And definitely, definitely call again next week. Okay, we'll keep it rolling here. Guys, I'm going to try my best to get to everybody, but we are running long already, so stick with me, and I'll do my best to make it through. But we will go to 432 next. 432, you are up. State your name and where you're calling us from tonight. Four, three, two. Are you with us?
Yes, sir. I am.
Okay.
This
well,
is Mike from
where, Texas. Where are you calling from and what's your name?
This is Mike from Texas.
Okay, Mike.
Y'all kind
Mike,
of
good talking. What do you think of the show?
Well, I thought it was a pretty decent show. I kind of caught it a little bit late, heading back from another place. But from what I saw, main event told a really good story, and I appreciated the work. And I think that was one of Jon Moxley's best matches I've seen in quite some time. I would like to know what you think, where you think they're going to go with Claudio after the loss, and where do you think they're going to go with Danielson after the loss?
Yeah, the Claudio thing, good question. Claudio, I don't get the sense, unfortunately, this is, I don't mean to sound mean, but I don't know that he – I just don't know that he is going anywhere. I mean, I think that you can put him in rematches with Chris Jericho, obviously, if you want to do that. I don't know if there's an ROH – I don't think there's an announced ROH show coming up, but, you know, it makes sense for him to be on that show. So I don't have a good answer for Claudio. I think he's going to just be around, and he's going to hover around some things, and he's going to be a part of the Blackpool Combat Club and probably spend a lot of time on Rampage, you know? So, kind of an unfortunate answer. Danielson, that is an interesting – a more interesting proposition, I think, because he's just such a big star for the company and one that Tony Khan's going to need to lean on more with Kenny Omega not around, the Young Bucks not around, CM Punk not around, Cody not around. Like, he's up there. And so for him, like, I think there's still a story to be told with Chris Jericho. You know, I don't know how much you want to continue playing that card, but, you know, you got the Garcia thing going on. And so I think Danielson has been connected to that since that run of matches that he had with Daniel Garcia. So I think that's still in play. I also think that, you know, you can, if Adam Cole ever comes back, like that'd be a program that you could do. Not if he ever comes back, I'm sure he's going to come back, but I think that's a big, you know, a big singles program that he could have. So saying all that, Eric, I think he's kind of going to live at the upper part of the mid card and into that main event scene. Long term, he has this story with Moxley that can be ongoing. Whenever Tony Khan wants to play that card, you have in the video that aired today, Danielson talking about the losses he's taken in AEW, and he's got them all back except for Jon Moxley, and he didn't get it back tonight either. So that's a long putt if you want to try to think that if you're Tony Khan and continue telling that story as they go on. But I don't see a clear path for either of them at this point either. So it's a little bit money for both.
Yeah, I mean, I think you definitely need to harness Danielson's star power with the absence of Punk and Kenny Omega. And I'm scrolling right now. I've been scrolling through the roster to try and figure out who, they're headed for MJF and, you know, in theory he needs to go against the top guy. He's already faced a lot of the top guys that they could have, but some, and others are injured or suspended. I was going to say, Danielson being a gatekeeper for MJF, but that's the kind of match you'd want to save for a pay-per-view. So I don't know that you want to burn that off on TV. Right. Yeah, I mean, what do you do? I guess you could use him to try and elevate somebody, you know, Keith Lee, Swerve Scott kind of a deal. Does he shade heel? Does he stay as a face? You know, do you put him in against somebody like Brody King? I don't, you know, I'm just looking at the roster and nothing's really jumping out at me as like a next direction for Danielson. Do you put him in a tag team? Like they did with Moxie for a while. I don't know. I mean, he's already faced Hangman. It's weird because when you spend most of your time having everybody in the muddy middle, when you are in your situation right now where you're a little depleted again, it's hard to know where to turn.
Yeah,
but I'm sure they have. I'm sure they have ideas, right?
Yeah, I mean, and the tag team is interesting. You know, I think you know Daniel Garcia and him as a tag team. I'm in on that. I think that could work. It's just with Garcia as a holding the Pure Championship right now, and you know, Jericho specifically on the horizon. I just don't know that's in the cards, even though that would make sense. I don't know, like. If you continue going down the roster a little bit of guys to get elevated, like Powerhouse Hobbs, you know, I mean, that could be kind of like a feud that you put Danielson into to try to make Hobbs something there. But you're right. There's a lot of guys on his level, I think, Hobbs's level, that are out there. But really, Adam Cole's the only kind of main event guy that sticks out as something reasonable at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, they already did Danielson Miro. They did Danielson Page. You know, it's I think they did Eddie Kingston, if I'm mm-hmm. not mistaken. And I don't know. You know, it gets a muddy middle.
Yeah,
I'd love to see you know Penta and Bryan Danielson just you know as a short term you know one off match. That would be an interesting TV match to see. With those two, might be a styles clash, but they're both so good. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you go.
Yeah, we'll see. We will see. 42, back to you. Any other questions, comments on the show tonight?
I don't know if you have have somebody that's going to be a on-site correspondent or not, but I'd kind of like to know what happened after everything went off the air because Danielson actually pulled the belt away from Regal, and I don't know if he was going to be a sportsman and hand it back to Moxley, or if it was going to be if there was going to be a little bit of heat in between the two.
Yeah, so we were debating that too. I'm scrolling through, you know, I've been scrolling through Twitter here to try to see if there's any kind of fan footage of what happened, or if AEW put some up themselves, and they haven't. There is though. Clips of Moxley cutting a post-match promo. So that leads me to believe, Eric, that they didn't do some kind of angle between the two because he kind of was standing the champion talking about how the belt doesn't define him, but he defines the belt. Like, that screams to me that they did not do some kind of Danielson turn on Moxley angle. But what say you?
You'd want to save that for TV for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Even if it was supposed to happen, you know, once you go off the air, you don't do it because, you know, you're not on the air. Brett and Sean would tell you that for sure. What else, 432?
I that kind of kills all my questions right now. This is the first time for me to call in. I normally get to listen to you while I'm at work. So, I really enjoy y'all and look forward to hearing more.
I really appreciate it. I missed your name at the beginning, but what's your name? And you're calling from Texas, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's Mike.
Mike, right. Okay. Yeah, Mike, thanks. Really, I'm glad you called. I hope you call again and appreciate you listening and contributing. So thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
All right, so we will continue on here. Let's go next. Let's see. Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Welcome on into the show. Always good to talk to you. What did you think of Grand Slam tonight?
It was probably one of the better shows of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But,
what are your questions?
My first question.
Three
is
of them, I'm sure.
Yeah, my first question is on this world title match, Moxley and Bryan. Who do you think would have a better shot of, like, defending themselves? Say if someone, like, went off script like Punk, not necessarily that they would bring Punk back, but say, like, someone else would try to go off script and they were a legitimate, like, MMA fighter or had a strong background in it.
Man, you know, I'm taking either of them, to be honest, because I think they both, you know, will be able to take care of themselves in that regard. But, you know, Jon Moxley has a, you know, there's a another level that I think he can get to. So I'm going with the deathmatch guy, Eric, and I'm taking Moxley in a shoot fight.
Yeah, I mean, Danielson could just take down and submit whoever he was against, probably. Moxley is from the streets, and he is mean AF, as the kids say. To clean up the earlier thing, yeah, I'm seeing David Bixenspan has, he was there tonight in New York, and he tweeted a video of Bryan Danielson strapping the belt around Moxley's waist after Grand Slam went off the air. So,
there you go.
No angle afterward.
All right, good investigative work on social media there. Appreciate it, Eric. Ryan, what's your second question for us tonight?
My second question is on the MJF storyline that they're doing that, I don't know if it's a storyline, it could be real, that he's getting married soon. Is that the girl that he was making out with on a show way back, or is this a female wrestler or a famous actress or someone of note?
Huh.
You know, I don't know. Eric, do you know?
So the only thing I saw was the Sportskeeda post, right? On this, and the woman he was making out with had red hair, and she was what's the polite way to say this? She was curvy, and I think MJF has made a crack about his fiance being curvy, and I know she has red hair, so I suppose it is at least possible that she was on camera. I would tend to doubt it, just reflexively, like it was somebody local, but entirely possible that he was sloppily, obnoxiously kissing his fiance, or future fiance, back then on that show. I remember the show you're talking about.
Yeah, I do too. And but, yeah, I think it's possible. I don't know for sure. And I, correct. He's not married yet, right, Eric? He's engaged.
They just got engaged. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So Ryan, I'm not sure, but it's a possibility. Absolutely. What's your third question for us, man?
My third question is on Terry Slinkin. He sort of got involved in the title match, maybe not on his will, but because Jericho was throwing him around. And questions are about, they said he had a lot of, like, injuries, like he had, like, some sort of knee replacement or leg replacement and something else serious. And I'm wondering how he got those injuries and if he's always been, like, active, you know, in these title matches, or this first time, you know, on camera that he got a little bit shaken up during a match.
So I mean, I don't remember him, like, physically involved or really, like, all that much involved from a story perspective at all when he was running, and when he owned Ring of Honor. There's someone out there for sure, correct me on that. Because, you know, I don't remember fully all of those shows. So if there's somebody out there that can correct me, but I don't think he's ever really positioned himself like, you know, a Vince McMahon in his company. So it was a little bit of a surprise to see him kind of take that quote unquote bump today. And it's interesting that Tony Khan has him around, you know, to give kind of Ring of Honor that foundation and that root. And, like, because he's a major part of the history of that company. But my only issue with it is, like, if you don't know who he is, and there's a lot of people watching AEW Dynamite who have no idea who he is, I just don't know the impact that those spots have. And so I just would either not do it, Eric, or I would you know, tell people why this guy matters as much as Tony Khan thinks that he does. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag for me here.
I think this was not the first time he's been on AEW television. I feel like at some point along the way he was there for some reason and like he
was he's been on AEW television. I don't think he's gotten like physical during matches.
No, I don't think so either. He just was a cameo appearance.
Yeah.
I guess the thing that I found weird was it's possible they did this and I missed it, but I don't believe the commentators laid the foundation for this, right? They needed to explain who Kerry Silkin was. He was the owner of ROH during its big expansion period and, was an important figure in ROH for many years. I think it's possible they did that during the commentary and I just missed it. It's possible it came during a picture-in-picture part and they thought they were but I don't believe they did. And while I am not, you need to not have anybody debut unless they've had six video packages philosophy. I do think it would have helped to establish for fans who aren't familiar with ROH, that Kerry Silkin was this beloved figure, if only to make Jericho's dastardly heel stuff, you know, land a little bit better for those who weren't familiar.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
another
one
of those, you need Cliff Notes, you know, you need a PhD in wrestling to understand the AEW sometimes, and that is a criticism, not a big criticism for me, but among, you know, some who think they could expand their audience even further, it is a criticism.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan, great stuff, as always. Any other final questions or comments for us tonight?
I don't know if this question is appropriate because I have no idea what it means, but that acclaim they have, like that saying, scissors me daddy, do you know anything what that is in reference to? Because I'm a little bit confused when they say that.
So, I mean, it's an Eric.
Yeah, it's a bit X-rated.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think if there's a better way to say it, Eric, say it this way. But I think it's a sexual act.
So let me give you the Wikipedia version.
Yes, well played.
Tribadism or tribbing, commonly known by its scissoring position, is a lesbian sexual practice in which a woman rubs her. I'll edit this to lady parts, against her partner's body for sexual stimulation, especially for stimulation of the clit, according to Wikipedia. So it's a lesbian sex act. And I've always thought it was weird and potentially borderline offensive that they were, like, co-opting this thing, but it just took on a life of its own, and, like, the activist types who might have said, hey, this isn't cool, to my knowledge, possible they've said that, but I hadn't heard it. Had you heard it, Zach? Like, people,
I haven't heard it either. No, I have not heard anything either, but I've floated this to other, you know, people in my life, and I'm like, hey, you heard that on a wrestling show, like, what would you think? Would you chant it? Would you buy a shirt with that phrase on it? And it's a generally a collective, just really, like, that's a thing on a wrestling show. And they wondered, their next question to me was, do you think that everybody else knows what that means, or do they think it's just a phrase the acclaim made up?
I mean, probably Googled it if you didn't know, right? I mean,
you'd think. So Ryan, I mean, that's what it is.
I think Ryan knew, and he just wanted to make us have the uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah, Ryan rarely asks a fourth question, and that was a doozy.
Yeah.
Ryan, back to you.
Well, I did see that episode of South Park with Mr. Garrison, but I was just assuming that was hopefully something else, but, you know, because that was a full episode on Comedy Central years ago.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. I mean, that's what it was until it claimed, you know, co-opted it into a, you know, merch checks. So,
all right, thank
you.
Thanks for
appreciate it.
The
always
call.
Good to talk. Yeah, always good to talk to you. Thanks for making it.
Is this legitimately the first time in the Torch family of podcasts that question has been asked and people have explained. I gotta think Wade touched upon that at some point.
I don't know. I mean, I mean, obviously, don't quote me on this because I mean, I've listened to all the content, and I don't think so. I think we can attach our names to this history, Eric. I do.
All right.
Wikipedia
well,
was
I,
the way to go. So
yes, neutral site. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. All right, we'll continue on. Reverend Keith in Baltimore, you are up. Keith, a blast to talk to you, man. What did you think of the show?
Thank you so much. It's a blast to talk to you, Zach, and you as well. Eric Kroll, you are a wealth of knowledge. It's good to be able to talk to you both.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Reverend Keith. I'm not laughing at you. I'm still recovering from what I just read on the air.
I know. I was shocked. I mean, I can always leave it to Ryan to have those thought-provoking 3 points. This was his fourth point. Wow. I was like, is this the torch?
Yeah. Torch after
okay,
dark.
Hey, you know what, though? Like, you know, don't blame us. I mean, it's the acclaimed who have and Billy Gunn who have co-opted this thing. So we're analyzing.
Yes, nothing wrong with that. But listen, I want to get us back on track. I wanted to talk about Jericho winning the Ring of Honor world title. I had predicted this, and I'm going to explain to you why I believe this is a net positive for Tony Khan and AEW. Number one, Jericho equals ratings, and Jericho will truly bring eyeballs to Ring of Honor. People who don't know anything about Ring of Honor, now that they see Chris Jericho holding that Ring of Honor strap, they will now say, okay, let me look up on Wikipedia. Let me Google. Let me talk to some people who's followed Ring of Honor over the years to find out the history of this championship, you know, from the Nigel McGuinnesses to the CM Punks, Samoa Joes, Bryan Danielson, the list goes on and on, Colt Cabanas. You know, now Jericho has won the title. He, you know, they kind of, it was somewhat predictable if you think about it, because Jericho kept saying and they kept emphasizing that he had yet to win this title. Okay. So I think that this will bring some eyeballs to the Ring of Honor brand. What are your thoughts on that?
So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, on the surface, I agree with that. I mean, I think he will and would, except that there's no way to get your eyes on the brand at this point. Like, it's not like you can go and, Chris Jericho is the champion. This is interesting. I'll go, you know, give Ring of Honor a shot on Thursday night or Wednesday night or whatever, you know, whenever. Like, that's not there. You know, I mean, I guess you can go on YouTube and you can poke around and do that, but like, they don't have an infrastructure in place to capitalize on the new eyes that he may bring. And so that's why it's kind of a curious move at this point, and why I think it's either, hey, maybe something's imminent, or they're using Jericho to try to like make Daniel Garcia like the face of the company. Because other than that, I just don't know that, you know, there's a place for these people to go, Eric, to get their Ring of Honor fix once Jericho set the hook.
Yeah, I think that's about right. It's ROH has sort of been like, when there's a pay-per-view coming up, they put a little emphasis on it, and then when it's not, they kind of, it fades in and out, mostly out of consciousness. They just, you know, I don't really blame Tony Khan. He's trying to keep the brand alive until they can get a TV deal. And we live in this world of instant gratification and everything's got to be settled within a week or, you know, the same show and nothing can breathe. But, you know, that said, it has been 6 months now, 6 months or so since he bought ROH. And, what would have been worse if he just mothballed the brand until they got a TV show, or if he tried to keep it kind of on life support until he could secure a TV show? And, you know, obviously they went down that second path, and I just don't, it just feels like it's all a holding pattern until they get a TV deal. Maybe they're going to use Jericho to leverage, to try and leverage an hour of TV somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, and look, I think that there's potential there. I mean, especially if he's having a hard time securing that TV deal. for whatever reason, you know, this is another, this could be an attempt to try to put a, you know, a face on that brand that, that people are of and that, that people know. Go ahead, Eric.
Sorry, I got distracted because I just saw a huge Rampage spoiler, a video clip of it. I would not have guessed it in a million years, but I, if we get it, I'll save it in case we get an on-site correspondent. I don't want to step on their parade, okay. And I don't want to do spoilers. But
no spoilers.
It'll be everywhere by the morning. So it'll make Rampage worth watching. Like they might actually pop a rating from it, but it's only probably only old people who will appreciate it.
Sure. Now I'm intrigued. Now I'm deciding whether I want to look up. Look or wait. Keith, back to you.
Okay. I wanted to focus on Kerry Silken. I work about a mile away from Ring of Honor's old headquarters. I've been in Kerry Silken's presence on multiple occasions over the years when they would run shows here in Baltimore. He's a likable person. He rarely ever gets physical in storylines. He's normally there at ringside just to present the title belt during title matches or make presentations. Sometimes he would speak during intermissions, but to see him get pushed over, and I know he's had hip replacement surgery, I was shocked myself. But he had to have been cleared lest he would not have gotten physically involved. I know you said you was hoping someone would give you the 411 on that. I can honestly tell you I've been following Ring of Honor since about 2004. And like I said, they were right here in our backyard here in Baltimore. And, he rarely gets physical. Gary Juster, I would say, has gotten more physically involved in some of their storylines than Kerry Silk.
Hmm.
So hopefully that answers your concern.
Good to know. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, good stuff.
Next, I want to focus on the tag team title matchup. I thought that the way it was laid out scripturally, I thought it was very interesting, to say the least, because, all right, you had the mishap between Swerve and Keith Lee. Then the match lasted another 7 minutes. I think total the match lasted about, 12 minutes, I think it was, 12 to 13. It was a good match, but it was kind of interesting that The Acclaimed, okay, are supposed to be baby faces now. But Billy Gunn used a heel tactic as the second on the outside, or the manager, if you will. He was the one that used the heel tactic on Swerve to take him out of the match. You know, I thought that was odd, to say the least. And if you notice, the first three matches had distraction finishes. You know, Jericho's match, you know, in the beginning. And then you had this match, and then you had the All-Atlantic match. So, you know, what were your thoughts on how the tag titles actually changed hands and the ending of the match itself?
Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's the tag title match specifically certainly went against standard wrestling psychology, right? Baby faces are not supposed to cheat to win unless the heels are cheating so dastardly that it's fighting fire with fire. And that really wasn't the case here. And so, you know, there were – Reverend Keith is right. The first three matches ended via cheating, which – you know, that kind of repetition all in a row, you just need – Wade and Todd Martin have talked about this on The Fix for a while now. You just need a quality control person, somebody who's, you know, at the 10,000-foot level who can see that, oh, hey, these three things, they may all make sense in the context, but we can't have them all back-to-back-to-back on the same show because it, you know, sort of ruins it. But that said, in this one, I think only one of the cheating finishes worked in context, and that would be Jericho. Jericho worked in context because he violated the code of honor, right, in with the low blow, and that put heat on him, and you're not supposed to do that, and when you do, you're the bad guy. Pac had not really been a bad guy, so his cheating came out in left field and, like, left the, you know, flattened out that match, and then Reverend Keith is correct in pointing out it was weird psychology to have the baby faces to have to cheat to win. I mean, I guess it's not 100% out of character because the Acclaim have been heels and used heel tactics for, you know, really up until right up until this babyface turn, when the ass boys turned on him. And so, okay with cheating, but do it sparingly, and then make sure it works in the context of the match.
Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, I'm right in lockstep with you on that, Eric. I was a little bit more lenient in this situation, Keith, because for whatever reason, you know, for better or worse, I guess, Billy Gunn has been a part of this run in a positive way. And maybe, you know, as you said, Eric, it's an audience getting themselves over kind of way, but nonetheless, you know, he's a part of the act. And so for whatever reason, you know, I'm certainly talking out of both sides of my mouth in terms of like wanting consistency with characters and wrestling and baby faces doing things cleanly. But for that reason, in this instance, it wasn't as glaring of an issue as I have in other times, but that's just me. And maybe watching again, you know, I'd have a different opinion, but big pops like that can kind of cloud and muddy up what otherwise would be, you know, a poor booking decision. And to me, that's kind of what happened here. Eric, go ahead.
The crowd sure didn't seem to care. Right. Yeah.
Right. Reverend Keith, back to you for any final thoughts.
I actually have two, but I'm going to make them real quick. First, Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker cannot pull this stunt again, because that was the second time they swerved it. So they, you know, I guess they're going to keep this tandem together, you know, Britt and Jamie, because this is the second time she's come out there and made it seem like she was going to destroy Britt for doing dastardly deeds, and then she ends up joining her. So, you know, if they try it again, it's going to be like the boy who cried wolf. You know, what are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, they can't do this again. I wonder if this was maybe an audible, Eric, because of the Saraya signing, where it's they had plans to go with Jamie Hayter, and then hey, but you know, Saraya's out there, and we're gonna wrap that up, and we're gonna get that done. So okay, you know, we're going back. That's how I took it.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote my notes say that's lame. It doesn't move the story forward. Why are they doing this? Hayter in the women's match, was it a four-way interim title match at All Out as well? You were in the building, Zach. Hayter was the most over thing in that match, right? The crowd was really loving her. How much of that, you know, she's a badass, right? She looks like a believable ass-kicking female wrestler. And then part of it is, you know, guys posting peach emojis about Jamie Hayter's backside, which, you know, the camera often lingers on, right? That's how they shoot it, right? In AEW. But yeah, so it felt like the time was right for her and Britt to break up and have a feud. And I feel like you can only put that, I mean, I guess MJF and Wardlow, they built that from day one of the promotion, right? Or pretty close to day one, mm-hmm. when he became the bodyguard. And so they're doing the same thing with Hayter and Britt. It's like they may be missing their opportunity here. Hayter was over as a face at All Out, and now it's same old.
Yeah, and then thinking, look, if it works out and you get somewhere with Saraya and she kind of takes the mantle and is the, you know, the face of the women's division, like I don't think you want to put Jamie Hayter in that, you know, in that shadow if you're going to go with Saraya. So I think it's a smart call in that regard. But yeah, it certainly takes the wind out of her sails as a potential babyface. And so it just signals to me, Keith, that they're going a different direction.
She could be she's just stuck in her previous role, and she could be a gatekeeper heel before Saraya gets to Britt or, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah, yep, exactly. All right, Keith, what's your final point for us tonight?
Last but certainly not least, I'm concerned about the direction of one Bryan Danielson. I was hoping that they would have predictable tonight in the booking and put the strap on Danielson instead of taking it back to Moxley, because Tony Khan and his writing team had already laid the foundation for Mox versus MJF feud. with them cutting promos on each other the past 2 to 3 weeks, so you knew that was coming. So now that he lost tonight, where do you guys see Bryan Danielson in the mix of things? Do you think he perhaps fused with a returning Adam Cole? What do you see in the future for one Bryan Danielson? Thank you so much for taking my call, gentlemen. Have a great and blessed week.
Thanks for making it, Keith, as always. Reverend Keith, everybody. Appreciate it. All again, Reverend Keith. We hit on this a bit. Adam Cole makes a lot of sense. I think that's a good program for both of those guys, really. But, you know, Reverend Keith, after that, you know, I think we both kind of like we're looking at rosters and, you know, there's nothing concrete that's there. That's for sure, Eric. But as you've marinated on it a little bit, has anybody else come to mind?
I mean, if Adam Cole is not an option and, you know, I think you were at Forbidden Door, right? The finish of that four-way with Okada was just really flat and confusing. And that's because Adam Cole was badly concussed. And, you know, he made one appearance back when the Undisputed Era, Undisputed Elite, took out the Young Bucks. And then Bobby Fish promptly, his contract was not renewed after he was crap talking the promotion and or CM Punk or kicked out at 3.1 or got up and walked out, you know, Austin Aries style on CM Punk after when they had their singles match last year. So like if Adam Cole isn't available, I think looking at that roster, you need his star power on the show and you use him to try and elevate some people. Maybe, you know, maybe he slides into that role that CM Punk was playing when he entered the promotion last, you know, late August of 2021, you know, Punk worked with Darby Allin. Punk worked with some of the younger wrestlers trying to, you know, he won all the matches, but he was trying to give them a little bit of rub along the way. And maybe Danielson slides into that role.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to be hovering around, you know, for mid-card and main event. And I think like I'm on the side of, I think it was smart to go with Moxley tonight. I mean, you wouldn't have gone wrong either way, but I like this. I think that Danielson's road to another world title, there's money in that journey. And so I don't know that I would sacrifice that if there's potential to go that direction, you know, later in his AEW run. I also think you can, you know, eventually if MJF takes the title, you know, if you line up for him, Hangman Page, I mean, you have Jon Moxley, obviously, and then Page is next, and then Danielson after that. Like, that's a good slate of babyface opponents for him. And so I think he could drop into that role nicely as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You know, right, if Moxley loses, Danielson steps up to continue the feud with Blackpool Combat Club.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right, we will finish off the caller portion of the show tonight with this wondrous gentleman. Javier, welcome. Welcome to the show. What'd you think of Grand Slam?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing good, man.
I thought it was pretty good. I do agree that the wrestling wasn't like what you like at a super high level, but it was, you know, good. I did find the endings a little bit rough, particularly the first one with Jericho and Claudio kind of felt like very clunky, you know, the whole setup for everything. But I'm thinking, and I know this is anathema to Tony Khan, but what do you, I'm thinking they might end up having Garcia and Jericho at some point feud and then merge the Pure and World titles.
I think a feud between them two is almost a certainty at this point. As far as the titles, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. I wouldn't put it past them, and I wouldn't mind it either. I mean, I like the idea of the Pure title, but there's just so many darn championships that are around AEW right now, Eric, that I'm okay. I'm okay sacrificing that one, and yeah, I'd bet a lot of money on them having a match at some point. with at least the ROH world title on the line. But Eric, how about you?
Yeah, presumably Garcia will eventually, maybe he, I guess the question to me is not, you know, if they're going to have a match, but when, and if, when they do so, is Garcia still in the Jericho Appreciation Society when that first match happens, or is he already kicked out and that's, you know, he's total babyface and that's what's, what spurs the match. But yeah, I mean, they could do a couple of matches, right? Jericho gets the better of him in the first one and then ultimately puts him over. Jericho has been pretty good in AEW about, you know, trading wins in feuds. You know, he did that with Orange Cassidy. He did that with MJF. So seems like he'll do business when it's time to do so.
Yeah, I agree. Javier, who would you go with in that? I mean, obviously you kind of have to go with Daniel Garcia, but in your eyes, like when you think about the prospect of unifying those titles, are you in the camp of if you're going to do that, it has to be like a made guy like Jericho, or you know, up and comer like Garcia?
Well, because what I was thinking, like, if they want to tell a story, and they tend not to tell stories, but if you really want to tell like a really good story with them, have Jericho, you know, challenge him for the then get into the thing, and Jericho says he'll only wrestle if it's for, you know, both titles on the line. Jericho beats them by cheating as usual, and then that's how you, you know, that's what Daniel Bryan can do next, and then like they go to like a cabin out in the you know, in the Siberian wilderness to train together, and then Garcia comes back to win and beats Jericho for the title.
Yes, and you need, Tony Khan needs to get the soundtrack to Rocky IV, the Rocky versus Ivan Drago montage, and I'd be happy. I'd pop for that.
I mean, I think that's a good story. That's a good story.
Eric, you do watch Being the Elite, right?
I did when it was airing every week, faithfully. It's on hiatus.
Yeah, because the stuff that they did with the Rocky thing, SCU back then, that's actually kind of what made me think about that.
Yeah.
I think we might be able to retire the CM Punk pop for the Soraya pop, because I mean that was rather impressive.
It was really cool. I'm glad you brought that up, Javier, because there's two things that I really liked about it. Number one, it's just always fun seeing pops like that. To me, like they never get old, and it's you know what's special about pro wrestling. There's not a lot of other, you know, sports or entertainment where you get that type of rush. The other thing that I just loved about it was I loved her kind of command of the moment. And it's not a knock on people out there that get the big pop and, you know, are super emotional and can't really hold it in. It's not a knock there. I mean, you feel what you feel, but I think it, you know, it shows kind of like the confidence in Soraya and like the charisma that she has and kind of the star that she presents as, where it's like, you know, she totally like owned that reaction and played into it rather than have it kind of dictate to her what she was going to do and how she was going to emote. So I just loved her whole presence in that. And because of everything that happened with CM Punk, I don't know that we're going to be seeing too much of that pop, at least in the near future here. So yeah, a worthy replacement for sure, Eric.
Does Soraya have heat with Scott Colton?
Let's hope not.
All right.
Let's hope not. Although, you know, but you know what though, Eric, the next time you're at a press conference with them, can you ask Tony Khan that, please?
I have to say, I was so upset for so many days after that press conference, mostly because I feel like I let everybody down by not – I took the mic. I was bold enough to take the mic right after CM Punk's rant was wrapping up. I asked Todd Martin's question instead of the obvious – you know, what about MJF, and are you worried about him getting over as a face, which has been a recurring theme in the week since then. So Todd's question was very prescient. But obviously what I should have asked is – Are you, you know, Tony Khan, can you please react to all the shit that just came out of CM Punk's mouth? Because JFC, right? I mean, and I honestly was, I didn't want to become part of the story by having Punk cut a promo on me. And I just, it was so awkward. I can't describe how awkward it was in the room live. I mean, you know, nobody else asked the question either. And there were like, you know, wrestling journalists in there. I have a ton of journalism experience, just not, you know, covering wrestling things. And that was one of the more bizarre experiences I've ever been involved with. Yeah. It's, I am, I may be retired from that. You're going next year, Zach.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't mean to you know, push your buttons on it.
Totally triggered. Yeah.
Sorry. But hey, you know what? Hey, you know, you stepped up, you took the mic. That's good. Good on you for sure. Javier, what else? What else, man?
Well, on that topic real quick, I saw this mentioned somewhere online, so I didn't come up with it, but I loved it so much that we need to make this happen. What happened with the CM Punk thing, it's got to be known from now on as the Gripe Bomb. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, I did see that online. Yep, that's
hashtag
good.
The Gripe Bomb.
Yeah. That's got to be what's going on from now on. On the Jamie Hayter thing, I get the feeling that the original plan was to basically have her go into a feud with Britt Baker in order to get Britt Baker away from the title picture and, you know, have a personal feud going on. I think that with Soraya coming in, it feels like they might have pivoted.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said too. I think that's what it was, you know, and you know, I think it's unfortunate for Jamie Hayter because that's a, you know, opposite Britt Baker. That's, you know, that's a big spot for her and an elevation. But, you know, I mean, Soraya clearly is a priority at this point. You have her, so you kind of have to go that way, even if you had other plans. So I'm okay with that. I don't think that Hayter, you know, I think you can go back to it in a different way, right? I don't think you tease it. I don't think like you do it the same way, but you can do a Hayter babyface turn on Britt Baker down the road. I don't think that's off the table.
Hey, so the thing I don't understand is I think in the tag team match that they had last week with Toni Storm and Athena versus Britt and Serena Deeb, mm-hmm. I believe Deeb scored the pin on Toni Storm. Is that right?
Yes.
And then so tonight, so usually what that means, you classic wrestling booking 101, is you use the pin and tag team match to set up the challenger for a singles match, right? And that didn't happen. They went to a four-way instead to get more people on the big card at Arthur Ashe. But, like, so then, okay, so maybe you assume this, you know, Storm gets her win back over Deeb, and that didn't happen. So I guess a Deeb Storm title match, which feels like more of a TV experience than a Full Gear experience, is where they're headed to next or what's on the table. But it certainly didn't pay off tonight, and it was weird to have your new freshly minted champ take a fall that quickly after winning the belt.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think you play that, you can play that card, you know, and go Deeb versus Storm at some point. Yeah, I don't think it's a pay-per-view match. I think it's a TV, you know, maybe not even a TV main event. Like, I think it's just kind of there. Serena Deeb has been in that spot. Yeah, right. Rampage opening contest, perhaps. But yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. I think you, like, Tony Khan should focus more on the women's division. I mean, period. Like, give it some definition. Give it, like, a proper hierarchy. You've got players there. Go with it. And so, to me, I'm fine. I'm totally fine with a feud living outside of the championship. And if that's Britt Baker and Soraya now, great. And you do, you know, Deeb and Toni Storm for the title. Okay. I'm good with that. Jade Cargill, I still is the biggest star in the division, but is holding the secondary title. So they're going to have to address that at some point too, but she can enter the mix for sure. So you know, he has a lot of different options, but I'd be totally down with seeing these women compete in some actual, you know, some stories, you know, and I think Hayter and Baker is a good one. I think Soraya and Baker is a really good one too. So either way, but it doesn't seem like they're going to push Soraya into that title position right now because Toni Storm is there. And I think that'd be a bad mix. So Javier, I think you're onto something. It's just won't be Hayter. It might be Soraya and Baker.
Yeah, well, and because how that segment kind of ended with the three baby faces in the ring makes you think that they're probably going to ape a little bit of what's going on in Raw and have a three women faction versus a three women faction.
Mm-hmm.
That's my that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know if that's a pay-per-view match, but it's something.
I mean, my thing is how Eric feels about Hangman Page. That's how I feel about Hikaru Shida. So
is she actually injured?
Did she actually
sustain an injury?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, she just disappears constantly. So I don't, you know.
I assume she had an injury, but who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean that's the thing. You can't with her because like she's kind of like the one that they we need a break in the case of emergency kind of thing. But I'm kind of like, you know, I think she has a lot more than what they're willing to give her. Her last match was September 7th, so against Christina Marie Elevation taping. So
yeah, I mean she was on the pay-per-view. She was in that All Out Fatal 4-Way, but.
They yanked her from the follow-up tag match. They had her on, and then all of a sudden she was gone, and Athena replaced her.
All right, Javier, good stuff. We're running a little long here, man. Any final comments?
Oh,
get some emails, and then
that's pretty much what I had. It was kind of like a good episode. Yeah.
Do we do an outro with Javier's theme song as well, or is once enough?
We can never play this enough. Never, 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 never. So I'm playing it again, Javier, whether you like it or not.
I don't know if there's anything on the torch more polarizing than that. Some people really hate it.
Well, I love it, and I have the controls, and so it's getting played. It is getting played.
What have I done?
Javier, thanks a bunch, man.
Have a good night, guys.
All right. So we'll end our caller portion of the show there. But let's hit a couple emails, Eric. But before we hit some emails, you have such a vast history at the Torch with some very good recent columns that you can check out as VIP members. But a columnist, back in the day, early on in the Torch is run here. So how can people read some of your stuff? What's some stuff that you wrote about? And how can people follow you on social media?
Well, you could find my Twitter where I work under a mask. But I believe my wrestling Twitter right now is Ready for the Kota Ibushi Comeback is my handle.
Okay.
So you can find it that way. What did I write about recently for the Torch? I had my most recent piece was a opinion analysis piece, had the headline, The Summer of Tony Khan's Discontent. So, all about
that's what we call a tease in the biz.
Yeah. All about AEW's problems over the summer. And, as it turned out, I didn't know the half of it because all hell broke loose, even further, during and after All Out.
I think that there's a sequel piece that should be in the works to document.
Yeah, whatever's darker than Summer of Discontent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. awesome. All right, you'll go VIP and you can check out Eric's columns, current columns, and obviously all of his stuff in the newsletter in throughout years past in the archives. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Okay, let's get some emails here. We'll wrap up. We're going long. This one is first from JB in Detroit. His high team, assuming the rumors are true and Bray Wyatt re-debuts for WWE on SmackDown this Friday, who was the bigger get this week at this moment in time? Soraya to AEW or Bray back to WWE? Also, it could be a recency bias, but I thought that this year's Grand Slam show was actually a better overall show than last year's event. As always, love the show. And go VIP. Thank you, JB. I don't I would not agree with that last point. I liked last year's show better. I thought it was, you know, it had a great match in Kenny Omega and Danielson from like an actual match perspective. But the novelty of that, you know, seeing that in a ring in the first time in that stadium, to me that was really special. Even if the card around it maybe wasn't, you know, chock full of stuff. So that's my vote. Eric, what do you say of that? And is it Saraya or is it Bray? Who's the bigger get?
So as for the second point, the only thing I remember about last year's Arthur Ashe show is Danielson versus Omega. And, like, the crowd was, like, just, you know, buzzing that they were there. But, like, even before they locked up, they had given them, you know, huge ovations, and they just couldn't believe what they were seeing. It was, like, one of the big dream matches that you always hope for in AEW, but Tony Khan tends to parcel those things out. So, you know, there's still money between Danielson and Omega, right? I don't think they ever really resolved it. I don't know if this Dynamite card was more balanced than last year, but, you know, they say you're supposed to remember 2.5 things about a show, and I only remember the one thing from last year, but it was a year ago. I don't think I can comment on Saraya or Bray until Bray debuts, if in fact that's what's going to happen on Friday. The Fiend was very polarizing, and he killed just about every babyface he worked with, and they had to turn heel afterward. Seth Rollins being a big example of that. Bryan Danielson, I think, was the only heel to work with the Fiend and not, you know, have to turn heel afterward. And he was on his way out of the company at the time, I think, you know, last 6 months, certainly. I guess the question is, does Saraya provides a potential huge star? I don't want to go and say the ace of the division, because I think that's still Britt until proven otherwise, you know, Saraya's durability. But they needed a big star. Maybe they were hoping it would be Mercedes Renato, you know, the boss lady from WWE, but she's reconciled apparently after Vince McMahon left. So they still had that void to fill. And so if they can build the women's division around Saraya and finally get it out of the mud that it's periodically been in, in fairness, mostly been in during the 3 years of AEW, then she might be the better get. If Bray comes up with some new creative concept and hits it out of the park, and they rein him in and edit him and don't let him run roughshod, he could add something to WWE. But I think AEW is just all summer, you know, due to injuries and whatnot, and now due to suspensions and injuries, has felt a little depleted star power wise. So she could prove to be super valuable if she becomes a big star. Whereas Bray is entering a WWE, which already has a whole bunch of big stars, right? And so he's one of the top paid guys before he left. So usually he had a prominent place on the card and a lot of feuds, top feuds near the top of the card. So he could, you know, Bray has been gone long enough that he could freshen up the WWE product, but I guess WWE does not lack for star power, generally speaking. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Bray Wyatt's the bigger star, like in their own right. If you're comparing, you know, Bray Wyatt to Saraya, I think Bray Wyatt's a bigger star at this point, a bigger name, you know, in the industry. But I think the get of Saraya helps AEW more than Bray will kind of help WWE at this point. Because, as you mentioned, there are lots of top names in WWE. You know, they're very much like a content company right now. And I think, you know, Bray Wyatt gives them a lot of directions to go in terms of just creating that type of unique content, selling merch off of it. But I don't think he's going to be a guy that, you know, is going to carry the reins of the division of the men's division. I don't even know if he's going to win a world title, you know, whereas Saraya, I think, can very much help like write that women's division and be the biggest star that company has had in the women's division. So I think that means more to AEW than Bray does to WWE. So that's where I'll net out on it.
So we're in the same place.
Yeah, same place. Yep. Okay, last one. Zach in Texas. First of all, this is Soraya's house now. Okay, with that out of the way, this was an exceptional show. It started with that insane reaction from Jericho and 16,000 people singing Judas, including an older woman in the front row, which popped me. Claudio and Jericho had a banger. Jericho's been on a streak. The fact that in the year of our Lord 2022, Chris Jericho is ROH World Champion is wild. They claim got their moments, and the crowd went wild. Good for those guys. Incidentally, Billy Gunn is more over than he has any right to be. The women's match told a really good story, and Soraya's debut was amazing. Assuming she can go, there's your centerpiece women's act. Don't screw it up, Tony. The main event was incredible with the right person winning. Keeping MJF heel and navigating the storyline with Mox is going to be difficult, but I can't wait to see what Tony Khan tries. Thanks for the email, Zach. A lot of this we touched on, Eric. But I read it because it's a good email, but also Jericho as the Ring of Honor World Champion. I mean, I typed that out on Twitter while covering the show and before, you know, writing the news piece on it for PWTorch.com. And I'm just like, Chris Jericho is the Ring of Honor World Champion. Like, it's almost unbelievable when you think about, you know, where that brand was less than a year ago at this point, and where it's been as, like, a promotion that has impacted, you know, the history of the wrestling business in a lot of ways. I think it's just so fascinating and ironic that he's holding that world title on a meta level. I still chuckle about it even right now. It's insane.
I kind of shrug it off as a Jericho vanity thing. I don't, you know, until you get a TV. None of it matters until you get TV, and then it matters. And if Jericho is the key to getting them a TV for ROH, then it was worth it. If not, it's not like it's that much harm done to Claudio, but I'm not as high on it, I guess, as you might be.
Yeah. Well, and I want to say too, I'm more amazed that it's just Chris Jericho as ROH World Champion than I think it is like a good or bad move. It's just, you know, it's just crazy that happened. That opportunity for that to happen. Okay.
Eric, there's one thing we did not cover.
I was just about to ask you. Yes, go.
The Darby Allin video.
Yeah, okay. Good.
What the hell was that? He's got a giant body bag and it says House of Black on it. Was that supposed to be Malachi?
I don't know. I took it as more literal, where it's like the House of Black collectively is dead in that symbolically, you know, in that
well,
body bag.
Well, the bag was larger than Sarvi, which isn't that hard, but you know, if that's supposed to be symbolically Malachi, you know, about a burial. I mean, like a literal burial on TV. And my question is, my notes, I'm like, is that in good taste? And so it's like, I guess that depends on whether you think Malachi Black just legitimately has mental health issues or whatever it is that caused him to ask for his release, or did he get the, oh my God, Triple H is the only guy in WWE who believed in me and now he's in charge. So I want to sit out for a certain amount of time and get back to him. You know, I guess that depends on where you believe in, and maybe that wasn't a reference to Malachi Black at all. But the fact that I was asking the question, you know.
Well, that's a good call up, man. I took it straight up as like, okay, storyline, Darby Allin, you know, it's just House of Black collectively. But I mean, look, I don't know that we'll ever know, but if it was like a shot at him, I think that's a little bit of a low blow, you know, given what he's detailed as his reasons for leaving. Now, if he turns around and he shows up at a WWE show in the next couple months, you know, then I'll feel less bad about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Good catch though. And I mean, I like those Darby Allin videos. I'm a sucker for those videos. I think they're like well done and they're special. They have like a different feel to them. So I always like to pay attention to them. I did not catch that possible connection. So
yeah, admire his creativity, and the House of Black, is it House of Black and Sting Darby on Rampage? Is that the match?
Yeah, on Rampage. No DQ. Yeah.
That is the one you will want to watch without getting into why. You'll if you're on wrestling news websites tomorrow or on wrestling Twitter, you will already have it spoiled for you. We won't spoil it here, but it will be, you know, that seems like the must see coming out of based on what little I've seen on as far as Rampage spoilers go.
All right, very good. I'm intrigued. I still have not seen it, so I'll be interested to see what that is as soon as we wrap up here. Anything else in your notes, Eric, that we missed?
My notebook is depleted.
There we go. All right. I love it. We'll put a bow on it there. Thank you to all of our callers. Thank you to our emailers. Very much appreciate it. And thanks for everybody for holding. You know, it was a long, long night. Lots of news, lots of callers, but glad we were able to get to everybody. So appreciate it. I'm PW Torch, Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn. Go VIP, and you can check out my weekly audio show on the Canvas. That's a show on the art of wrestling. And you can go VIP by heading to pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can check out that show. You can check out 3 or 4 Wade shows and so much other great podcast content, as well as an ad-free version of the website, ad-free version of these shows, just day-to-day pro wrestling updates to get your fix. So pwtorch.com/goVIP. If you haven't done so already, head over to our YouTube channel. Just search PW Torch on YouTube, and there's just a wealth of content there. Tyler Sage and I do a weekly flagship show called The Fireside Chat. We've been doing live previews ahead of Monday Night Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We started that up last week, so that's been a blast. Two new interviews went up today and last week, Steve Macklin and Eddie Edwards from Impact Wrestling. So you can check that out. There's content from Wade up there and a host of other contributors. So, yeah, it would help us out a lot. Like the videos and subscribe to the channel. Very much would appreciate that. Eric, a blast as usual, man. This was a fun show to work with you on. One more time with any sort of plugs if you want. Yeah, we'll catch you next time.
No plugs. Thank you for asking me to co-host on what was a busy night for AEW.
It sure was. That's an understatement, I think. But yeah, awesome. A pleasure. Thank you very much. Thanks to all everybody for listening. For Eric, I am Zach, and we will catch you guys next time.